Funding for Capital Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis, Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM, Tallahassee. From the state capitol, Florida Public Radio brings you Capitol Report.
House lawmakers unveil their billion-dollar tax cut plan.
We have instead focused a majority of this tax cut on tax cuts that will exist for some finite period of time.
Also tonight, the march toward the regulation and thereby the reality of fracking in Florida appears relentless through the state legislature despite the objections of opponents.
Well, can you name me one specific study that says that hasn't been funded by the oil and gas industry that claims that there aren't threats to fracking?
We'll also check out legislative action on exempting the identities of murder witnesses from the public record, as well as a push to include computer coding as a priority subject in Florida schools. I'm Tom Flanagan. It's the middle of the third week in this year's Florida lawmaking session, and this is Capitol Report. House lawmakers seem to be whistling past the graveyard, so to speak, preparing to push forward on $1 billion in tax cuts similar to those championed by Governor Rick Scott. But Nick Evans reports recent projections from state economists mean those efforts could face major headwinds.
I have two priorities this year. My big priorities are going to be $1 billion in tax cuts and then having a dedicated trust fund for Enterprise Florida, $250 million. But today we're talking about $1 billion tax cut. So I think you have this.
That was Governor Rick Scott speaking before the Senate Finance and Tax Committee earlier this month. It's a relatively rare move for him to make his pitch in person, but it's become more common as he's thrown his shoulder behind that billion-dollar tax cut package. Wednesday in the House Finance and Tax Committee Chair Matt Gaetz unveiled his proposal.
At this point, I'll turn the gavel back over to Chair Gaetz.
All right, now we get to the fun part, everybody. We get to go through the tax package.
All told, his package comes to just over $989 million. But hey, what's $11 million between friends? Gaetz's plan is still in draft form, so the hearing Wednesday was simply a workshop aimed at developing ideas and taking comments to incorporate into the final product. And in his wide-ranging bill, Gaetz is going after the big issues.
Last year, we proposed taxing pear cider the same way we tax other malt beverages due to just, I think, an oversight in the law. Pear cider, though it's a malt beverage, is actually taxed as a wine, not as a malt beverage. So we will.
But when it comes to the real big-ticket items, Gaetz has his eye on some of the same issues as the governor. Here's Mount Dora Republican Representative Jennifer Sullivan.
I just wanted to thank you so much for your emphasis on cutting the business rent tax. It's something that we've talked a great deal about the past 2 years, and I'm very excited to see a plan for that for this year and next year going forward as well.
Gaetz calls it the crown jewel of his tax package, but not all of the governor's trophies made it into Gaetz's plan.
So the dollars are, we eliminate the corporate tax on our manufacturers and our retailers. It's a total of about $770 million. This year would be $384 million.
That cut is absent in Gaetz's version, but the House does include a number of credits for investments in renewable energy and cleaning up contaminated sites. Here's how he explains his approach.
Instead of accepting all of the recommendations that Governor Scott laid out, which I wish we could have, that would have created more recurring reductions in state revenue, we have instead focused a majority of this tax cut on tax cuts that will exist for some finite period of time.
But the billion-dollar price tag still has some representatives uncomfortable. Here's Boynton Beach Democrat Lori Berman.
I also do have a concern about the $1 billion. We just had the report that we're going to have $400,000 less in income. So I do think it's quite a lot of money, and I think we have to, you know, balance this against making sure that we're funding our education, our health care, our safety. So I am a little bit concerned about the number that we're dealing with.
But keep in mind, it's an election year. Lawmakers want something to show their constituents. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Nick Evans.
A divided Florida House today signed off on an industry-backed bill that critics say will pave the way for fracking in Florida. The controversial oil and gas drilling technique involves pumping water and chemicals more than a mile beneath the Floridan aquifer, where the state gets most of its water. Jim Ash has the details.
The House passed a similar bill last year, but it stalled in the Senate. The latest version puts fracking on hold until scientists conduct a year-long study and the legislature signs off on new regulations. But no amount of watering down can dilute passions on the other side. Amy Datz, a spokeswoman for the Environmental Caucus of Florida, says she's not going away even if the bill becomes law and the study and the rulemaking begin.
In those 2 years, we're going to be really busy going door to door, county to county, city to city, asking people to ban fracking.
Legislation banning fracking can't get a hearing, and opponents won't be happy with anything less. So when the House debate began Tuesday, Democrats tried to torpedo the bill with 27 amendments. This exchange between Evan Jenny of Hollywood and bill sponsor Ray Rodriguez of Fort Myers set the tone and demonstrated the gulf between both sides.
Well, can you name me one specific study that says that hasn't been funded by the oil and gas industry that claims that there aren't threats to fracking?
Representative Rodriguez.
I would counter with, can you give me a study that wasn't funded by the environmentalists that says the opposite?
Datz and her colleagues convinced cities and counties across Florida to pass anti-fracking resolutions, and Bonita Springs passed an anti-fracking ordinance. But bill sponsors say they have an answer for that. The legislation originally banned local governments from regulating fracking at all. The latest version gives them the right to zone fracking away from residential neighborhoods, as long as they don't, quote, inordinately burden drillers. Florida League of Cities lobbyist Rebecca O'Hara says that's enough latitude for her group to drop its opposition to the bill.
It is the product of several weeks, or I would say months, of negotiations over how to craft that balance to define where those areas of local government regulation begin and end. And we believe that this language gets us there.
Proponents are baffled by that opposition. Senate sponsor Gary Richter of Naples says Florida couldn't stop fracking right now if it wanted to. Here's Environmental Spending Committee Chairman Alan Hayes coaching Richter on that point earlier this week.
If my position today is saying I'm against fracking, should I be in favor of this bill or against it?
Mr. Chairman, I would say a prevailing no vote on this bill would result in no regulation.
But that doesn't mean the bill will have easy sledding in the upper chamber. Senator Charlie Dean, the Environmental Committee chairman, has voted against it. Senate Appropriations Chairman Tom Lee has voted once for the bill, but he's calling for changes and he's clearly not happy.
You know, I'm so disappointed that the proponents of this bill won't stand up here behind Senator Richter and explain to us why this is good public policy.
The bill will have to make a stop in Lee's committee before it hits the floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Jim Ash.
Late today, the House passed the measure 73-45. Still to come on Capitol Report, a legislative push to keep the names of those who witnessed a murder out of the public record.
The last conversation I spoke with my 16-year-old son was, I love you, and he walked outside. 3 hours later, my son was dead. We do have people that know something, but of course they're scared to speak.
A Senate Education Committee says schools can substitute the Florida Standards Assessment for something else, but there's some surprising opposition. Anti-testing parent groups.
I disagree with SB 1360 and do not support it. It does nothing to reduce the excessive preparation to take these tests, which we are all very concerned about.
And while lawmakers say they don't want to make fantasy sports a crime, most agree it's time to regulate it.
If we have potentially hundreds of millions of dollars being paid by Floridians to participate in contests, we want to make sure that they're done properly.
Support for Capital Report is provided by the Able Trust, believing growth and productivity of Florida depends on a diverse and inclusive workforce. The Able Trust encourages all businesses to include talented Floridians with disabilities as vital staff members. More information is at abletrust.org.
A bill initially aimed at protecting the witnesses to a felony crime has now gone through another change in the House after passing a second committee. Sasha Cordner has the latest.
Originally, Tampa Democratic Representative Edna Raines' bill provided a public records exemption for the identity of a witness to a felony. It's gone through some other changes, but the measure has now been narrowed again.
It basically narrows this public record exemption to provide that it only will apply to witnesses of a murder instead of all felonies.
The measure stems from a 14-year-old who was murdered in a park. According to the Tampa Police Department, Edward Harris was a witness to crimes that led to multiple arrests.
You have the opportunity today to stop the snitching mentality and supporting House Bill 475. You have the opportunity today to save my life, your life, and a child's life by supporting this bill.
That's Tangela Sears, the founder of Miami-Dade Parents of Murdered Kids. She spoke recently to lawmakers at a House panel about the measure, and she brought with her other parents who had similar stories. Among them is Trinell Harris, who used to be a mother of four living children. That quickly changed when her son Richard Hallman, an aspiring engineer, was fatally shot in March of last year. With no witnesses coming forward, it's now an unsolved murder.
The last conversation I spoke with my 16-year-old son was, "I love you," and he walked outside and got a call back 3 hours later. My son was dead. And yes, we do have people that see something, that know something, but of course they're scared to speak. I'm a mother of three now. I support this bill not only as a bill of words, but a bill of movement.
While Leon County Public Defender Nancy Daniels says the bill is heading in the right direction with its latest change of protecting witnesses to murder, she still has an issue with the bill. She represents the Florida Public Defenders Association.
Our only issue is at line 19, where it states that the only entities that can get access to this information are governmental entities for use in the performance of official duties. As criminal defense lawyers who represent people charged with crimes, we are entitled under the rules of discovery and the Constitution's Sixth Amendment right of confrontation to find out the names and identifying information of witnesses that are going to testify against our client. It's part of due process of law.
Barbara Peterson, the president of the First Amendment Foundation, had similar objections. She's voiced her concerns to the measure in all its forms in the past, saying it's unconstitutional.
They are trying to narrow it, but they're still not addressing the issue of the constitutionality of denying this information to a criminal defendant. And once information is lawfully obtained, in other words, once the prosecution gives the information to the criminal defendant, who has the right to, you know, confront his or her accuser, once that information is given to the criminal defendant, government cannot control the downstream use of the information. So I just don't see how this is going to work.
Still, Noreen's bill has encountered bipartisan support, earning all yes votes so far, and now has one more stop before heading to the House floor. Meanwhile, the Senate bill by Inverness Republican Senator Charlie Dean has not yet had a hearing. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Sasha Cordner.
Florida parents, students, teachers, administrators, and most importantly, lawmakers appear fed up with the Florida Standards Assessment. The exam has mostly replaced the old FCAT as the state's public school test, but as Lynn Hatter reports, a proposal to give districts an option on whether to administer the FSA or an alternative is catching heat from anti-testing organizations.
The bill doesn't repeal the Florida Standards Assessment, nor does it reverse the state's new academic standards. And that's something that angers Judy Stevens of St. Johns County.
I disagree with SB 1360 and do not support it. It does nothing to reduce the excessive preparation to take these tests, which we are all very concerned about.
Anti-testing advocates have pushed the state for years to refute the nationally normed Common Core standards, or as they're called in Florida, the Florida standards. And they've won some battles, like getting the state to pull out of a Common Core testing consortium and pressing the state to review the standards, leading to some tweaking and a name change, as Meredith Mears with Florida Parents Rise points out.
Many parents, including myself, have had the standards and assessments conversation with you and our State Board of Education members for many years. Sometimes you listened, a little. Most other times you were dismissive. Senate Bill 1360 is not any different. I oppose this bill for the following reason. The high-stakes assessments are still attached.
But for the most part, the current system is firmly in place. Lawmakers are now just trying to figure out how to smooth out the rough parts, of which there are many. Last year, the first run of the Florida Standards Assessment hit technical glitches, and a review of the exam later found parts of it did not align with the state's own standards. Some districts threatened to pull out of the state's testing and school grading system completely, and an idea began to emerge: use other nationally known tests as alternatives.
School districts could choose to remain with the Florida Standards Assessment, the FSA, or districts could choose under this bill to use ACT Aspire for students in grades 3 through 8 as a substitute for the FSA.
Republican Senator Don Gates is carrying the bill, which the ACT organization helped craft. The FSA would not be replaced, but districts would have the option of choosing an alternative. High schoolers would also be able to use alternative assessments to meet state graduation requirements.
Students who take AP courses and pass AP exams don't have to take another state test under this bill to demonstrate proficiency in English language arts, biology, and U.S. history. The bill further allows a CLEP option: pass the test, get the credit.
Gates argues the SAT and ACT have a long track record and they're pretty much mandatory for college admissions. The inspiration for the bill came from Seminole County Schools, which first raised the issue. Indian River School Board member Sean Frost says his district is fully on board.
So the SAT and ACT are market-driven solutions and they're highest quality. They offer meaningful accountability.
And most people know what they are. The Florida Citizens Alliance opposes Common Core. The group's Keith Flau says the bill is a false choice and does not allow anyone to completely opt out of the assessment system.
It still leaves the FSA in play, which is a disaster on every front.
Flau says tests prior to 2009 may be a good alternative, but not the newer versions of the exams. But Gates is holding firm.
The two criticisms leveled against the bill are correct. First, this bill does not repeal the FSA. And so if you will accept nothing other than a repeal of the FSA, this is not a bill for you.
Despite the concerns, the Senate Education Committee unanimously passed the bill, but there's no companion measure in the House. And normally, in order for bills to become laws, there must be a counterpart in the other chamber. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Lynn Hatter.
While we're on the subject of education, former Yahoo exec Jeremy Ring helped build the modern tech landscape. Now, as Kate Payne tells us, the Florida senator wants high schools to teach computer coding.
Back in the day, Margate Senator Jeremy Ring launched Yahoo's East Coast office from his New York apartment. Now he wants to launch Florida students into the tech world. Under his plan, high school students could take computer coding classes for foreign language credit. Ring calls computer literacy essential.
Any industry that you may work in today, whether it is law, construction, journalism, medicine, whether you go into politics, it doesn't really matter, sales, you need to have a technology understanding in order to compete in life.
In a broad sense, coding lets people tell computers what to do. There are different coding languages like Python, C++, or Java, and like other languages, they have grammar and syntax. Different languages lend themselves to different uses, HTML for websites or Ruby for apps. Like writers and great cooks, programmers use a set of tools to solve a problem. There are many different solutions and infinite ways to get there. Senator Ring says that's where the creativity comes in.
I've always believed, stronger than ever now, that computer coding and technology is really more of a liberal arts than it is a STEM. Now, I know that changes the entire paradigm of what we've always thought about technology, but if we really should look at it today as a humanities, almost a social science.
But the proposal is making some educators nervous. Teachers and students value multicultural education in a hyper-connected world. But some worry coding students will skip over German and French on the way to building the next startup. But Ring says he's not replacing anything.
We get a lot of questions, are you replacing foreign language? And I can emphatically say, no, we're not replacing foreign language. You can still take French or Spanish or German or Mandarin or whatever it may be. Or, as an option, you can take C++ or Python or another computer language.
Governor Rick Scott calls Florida a business paradise, but Ring says tax cuts alone won't attract tech.
If Florida wants to compete and get companies like GE, and we're not talking a manufacturing plant, we're talking headquarters. Headquarters, okay? If that's what we're talking about and we want to compete, we have to compete with an innovation economy. There's no other way. GE just said that to the entire country. You want companies like us, you have to have an innovation ecosystem.
Proud of you, son. GE, manufacturer.
Well, that's why I dug this out for you.
It's your grandpappy's hammer, and he would have wanted you to have it.
It meant a lot to him.
Yes, GE makes powerful machines, but I'll be writing the code that will allow those machines to share information with each other.
Caroline Joyner represents the policy group TechNet.
The need for programmers well-versed in the latest computer coding languages will only continue to grow. By 2020, there will be 1 million more jobs that require computing skills than there are qualified graduates to fill them.
Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle praise the plan as innovative and forward-thinking, but some feel uncomfortable viewing students as future cogs in the tech machine. Senator Jeff Clemens of Lake Worth got philosophical in a previous committee hearing.
I think it's centered on whether or not the outcome of an education that we provide, a public education we provide, should be centered around getting a job. Obviously, you're more likely to be able to get a job coding than you are being able to speak French, but I think it goes back to the debate of why we provide an education to begin with.
The bill has one more committee stop before heading to the Senate floor. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Kate Payne.
A bill banning Florida cities from giving undocumented immigrants sanctuary from enforcement of immigration laws is poised for a vote on the House floor. The measure by State Representative Larry Metz, a Republican from Yalaha, would force state and local governments to comply with federal immigration laws against so-called sanctuary cities. Metz has said he crafted the bill after the fatal shooting of a 32-year-old woman in San Francisco, allegedly by an undocumented immigrant who had previously been deported. But opponents like State Representative Jose Javier Rodriguez, a Miami Democrat, say the measure would force local police and teachers to report on the people they serve. Rodriguez also says it won't reimburse local governments for detaining undocumented immigrants. The bill came up on second reading in the House on Tuesday and was temporarily postponed, but expected back for a floor vote soon. You're listening to Capitol Report from Florida Public Radio. I'm Tom Flanagan. What's going on at the Capitol tomorrow? We're so glad you asked, and Ronald J. Eben has the answer.
At 10 o'clock at Tallahassee City Hall tomorrow morning, state agency heads will take part of the town hall meeting on issues affecting seniors. The town hall, part of Florida Senior Day, is expected to include Sam Vergese, Secretary of the Florida Department of Elder Affairs, Surgeon General John Armstrong, Secretary of the Florida Department of Health Mike Carroll, Secretary of the Florida Department of Children and Families, and Barbara Palmer, Director of the Florida Agency for Persons with Disabilities. Also attend, children's health care will be discussed by the Florida Healthy Kids Corporation Board of Directors, that meeting at the Winewood Boulevard building. At 1:30, the Senate will hold a floor session and could approve a bill that would shift the legal burden of proof in Stand Your Ground self-defense cases. The bill stems from a Supreme Court ruling last year that said defendants have the burden of proof of showing they should be shielded from prosecution under the Stand Your Ground law. In Stand Your Ground cases, pretrial evidentiary hearings are held to determine whether defendants should be immune from prosecution. The bill would replace the burden of proof on prosecutors in the evidentiary hearings. The Senate could also approve a bill tomorrow that's designed to prevent backyard shooting ranges in residential neighborhoods. And those are some of the top issues on the legislative agenda for Thursday, January 28th. I'm Ronald J. Evett.
Finally tonight, when it comes to fantasy sports, lawmakers are divided. While some call it gambling, others aren't so sure it qualifies. And while some say the Department of Business and Professional Regulation should oversee it, others would put it under the purview of the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, which is responsible for things like sweepstakes. But Regan McCarthy reports lawmakers are unified in one respect: they don't want to make it a crime.
Nearly 3 million Floridians play fantasy sports. That's a statement one hears thrown out in almost any conversation about fantasy games in Florida. And despite ambiguity surrounding the legality of the games, no lawmakers seem interested in sending the participants to jail. But Senate Regulated Industries Chair Rob Bradley admits he's not sure it's fair to lump season-long games people play with a group of friends together with daily sports supported by companies like FanDuel.
I've been in a league with my son and family members for 10 years where we pick a team at the beginning of the year. You go through the entire football season, and that's what many Floridians consider to be fantasy sports. Very innocuous. It's clearly entertainment. It's fun. And no one in the world is interested in criminalizing that behavior or even suggesting that there's anything wrong with it.
But Bradley says he sees daily fantasy sports differently.
That, to me, begins to look more and more like what we consider to be traditional sports betting. And it's sort of, like I said before, it's what's your definition of obscenity? It's kind of in the eye of the beholder, but you kind of know it when you see it.
Meanwhile, Stewart Republican Senator Joe Negron has a plan to regulate fantasy sports.
If we have potentially hundreds of millions of dollars being paid by Floridians to participate in contests, we want to make sure that they're done properly.
Negron has a bill he says will help ensure that.
This bill says here's some regulations. You can't steal the money. You got to post a bond. You can't have criminals running it. And also gives the government the power to have what I think are common sense consumer protections.
But some in the gaming industry have concerns. Mark Dunbar is a lawyer with the Tallahassee law firm Jones Walker. He's representing the Spectrum Group and says fantasy sports stand to have a major impact on the horse racing business.
We are competing for a lot of the same players, particularly the advantage players, the folks that wager large volumes, use sophisticated computer algorithms. We are essentially competing in the same space.
And Dunbar says he thinks fantasy sports should face the same regulations followed by other gambling entities in the state. Right now, he says there are no criminal penalties involved with the proposed regulation of fantasy sports. And Dunbar says some scandals have already come up within the industry.
First, you had a group fantasy company that set up shop, took a lot of people's money, closed shop, left with their money. There is no criminal penalty to that activity. The second one was the insider trading, where you had people inside FanDuel and DraftKings that were essentially wagering into their pools. That could go on today, and there's no criminal penalty to the activity.
But Negron argues that would be covered under the state's fraud laws, and he says he'll check to ensure that's the case. Meanwhile, a similar bill is moving through the House. It's sponsored by Shalimar Republican Representative Matt Gaetz. For Florida Public Radio, I'm Regan McCarthy.
Our regular Capitol Report correspondents are Jim Ash, Sasha Cordner, Ronald J. Eben, Nick Evans, Lynn Hatter, Regan McCarthy, and Kate Payne. We also thank our contributing Florida Public Radio stations. Technical assistance for Capitol Report is provided by Taylor Cox, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Follow us on Twitter at @FPRCapReport. And join us again each weeknight during the 2016 Florida lawmaking session for more reports from the state capitol.
Audio copies of Capitol Report are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. You can also hear Capitol Report online, including archives of past shows at fprn.org. Funding for Capitol Report is provided by the following. A grant from the law firm of Searcy, Denny, Scarola, Barnhart & Shipley, supporting public radio and taking time to care. On the web at searcylaw.com. And from Lewis, Longman & Walker, a law firm helping clients navigate the maze of regulatory and political processes. Offices in Tallahassee and statewide. More about Lewis Longman & Walker's legislative lobbying and other governmental affairs practices is at llw-law.com. WFSU-FM Tallahassee. This is Florida Public Radio.